So we're learning about tshuva today. And we're going to learn about a straightforward way to spark tshuva, a sincere tshuva. Now let me say that I don't think tshuva is an easy thing to do. It's a very difficult thing to do, especially when you have to initiate it. In other words, there are times in life when we feel a longing or a yearning, maybe a dissatisfaction, status quo, an unhappiness with the reality as it is. And because we feel this dissatisfaction, because we're frustrated and upset about things, so we decide we're going to make a change. In the language of addiction, a person doesn't change until they hit rock bottom. Sometimes when you hit rock bottom, you can't bounce back. And that's the tragic story of people who actually succumb to addiction. So sin is very much like addiction, because you think it's going to make you happy, but it doesn't. It gives you a temporary sense of satisfaction. One of the oldest Freudian ideas, which is actually still in use, is that addictions are caused with pseudo-fillers. So a person has real needs. Hashem created us with needs. And people are dissatisfied because their needs aren't met. So they try to fill their needs. And if they had their needs filled, they would be happy or satisfied, which in chemical terms means maybe a release of serotonin or dopamine or something like that. And have this real need, and they don't have the ability to fill the real need, but there's something else that's available, it's easy. So they reach for it, and what it does is it gives them a temporary rush. It releases some dopamine, or it gives them this chemical release of serotonin. And when that happens, the result then is that the person suddenly feels happy. Says, oh, this is great, this is what I need, because now I'm happy again. Before I was feeling empty, I was feeling lonely, and I was feeling forlorn. So the person thinks, this is great. Okay, I just need more of this. Now, the problem is, of course, that that's putting a round peg into a square hole. So it doesn't really fit. It doesn't really make them happy. So after they've made themselves happy, they're not happy again. So what do they think? Intuitively, they think, I just need a little more of it because I was happy, so I need a little more. So I'll have a little more, and then I'll be happy. And then they're happy again. And the happiness is more short-lived each time. So you keep doing it. You keep expecting it to provide you with lasting happiness, but it doesn't. It provides you only with a quick fix. And as we learned many times, there's no such thing as a quick fix. Now, Altareba begins his whole book by telling us there are no quick fixes. It's karev ma'id. It's very close. It's exceedingly close to you. Ficha uvavcha. It's in your mouth. You can talk the talk, and you can really discuss this until it becomes something important to you. You can do la'asaysa, you can follow through with action, and even more so, it's bilvavcha, it's in your heart. You can change yourself. But Alter Rebbe says the one little caveat, and the caveat is that this is a derech arucha uktzara. It's the long, short way. So the short way is you measure in distance. It's very short. But once you start traveling the road, you find that it's full of roadblocks and obstacles. So it looks short, but it's actually not short. And that's why something like Waze will tell you not only what's the quickest way to get there, but Waze will tell you where there's traffic. So that's why it's, now I think Google Maps caught up already. They do the same thing for you. Yeah, I think you're pretty much, not just, because once upon a time, in the ancient times, like 5 years ago, the GPS would give you would give you directions. It would tell you you should get there in 20 minutes, and 47 minutes later, you're not even halfway there. Well, the GPS doesn't know what's going on actually on the ground. It just tells you what's the shortest route. It'll give you a short route, or a scenic route, or a cheap route. I mean, there's no tolls, or yes tolls, or you can see a lot of farms. What's actually going to be faster? How should the GPS know? But now the GPS is interactive. Now it's collecting information. You know, the way system is dynamic, live. It's actually talking to people. So people are making reports. And because there are Wazers making reports, so then, this is Jewish technology, of course, purchased by Google from Israel, you know what's going on, so you have a dynamic a live feed, and therefore you can find the what will be the shortest way. And it may be a much longer way. It may be geographically or physically a longer distance. But since the road is clear and it's open, that's the faster way to go. So there's no quick fixes. The Alter Rebbe warns you. He says, if you want quick fixes, sorry. You're not going to find it here in Chabad. Chabad does not believe in quick fixes. Chabad believes in the long, short way. It's short. You'll get there, but it takes effort. This is not an effort-free Yiddishkeit approach. This is not a quick shot of inspiration and you're off to the races. Not at all. Now, that's true about everything in Avodas Hashem, and certainly it's true with regard to tshuva. So tshuva is the situation where a person, as we started talking about addiction, gets addicted to sin. He found sin happy. Sin was fulfilling. It felt good, but not really. Because we weren't built for sin. We were built to be susceptible to sin, but not built to find satisfaction in sin. The only way an neshama really finds satisfaction is by nurturing a profound relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because that's who we really are. And that's what we're separated from. Purposefully. Hashem separated us from Him and sent us down here on a mission. And He said, figure it out. Try to come back home. Try to nurture, try to recreate, try to cultivate this closeness so that we should be able to experience an even more profound and even higher and even more intense relationship. So we're distanced in order to come closer. And if the neshama is not fulfilling its destiny, it's not doing what it came here to do, it's not going to be happy. And indeed, many people are unhappy. And they're not unhappy because they suffer from poverty or ill health or suffer from lack of relationship only. These things are contributing factors. They're ultimately unhappy because they don't have purpose to life. And that's why there are people who have enormous amounts of money and fame and it would seem everything that dreams are made of. And they are so unhappy that some of these people commit suicide. Oh, don't be silly, Rabbi. It's just mental illness. No. Don't tell me stories about mental illness. All of a sudden, we have a higher rate of suicide than in modern history. We don't have a higher rate than now, the last few years. With everybody's more mentally ill. Everybody went crazy. What, there's lead in our water? How did it happen? Because we live a godless life. The new Western culture is godless. The new Western culture is atheistic. The new Western culture celebrates I, me, and ego. And because of that, ego edges God out. And what happens is when we have a godless life, we have a purposeless life. What is the purpose? What are you doing? What are you coming for? And intuitively and subconsciously, the neshama knows something's very wrong with this attitude, this approach to life. So people are profoundly unhappy. Unhappy, have no meaning, no purpose. They try to stuff their life with sin. It didn't work. It didn't make them happy. So ultimately, some people make that terrible, fateful decision to end life because life was so frustrating for them.
You just explained why Europe is committing national suicide.
I won't argue with that. Yeah. Forget what faith system, but the fact that somebody's talking about God is already a healthy thing. You're built for that. You're built for that. If you go against your grain, you have to get scratched. So how does one find then satisfaction and happiness? The answer is come close to Hashem. That's the only thing that's really going to work. So people sometimes, when they chas v'shalom lose a relationship, they almost always gain weight. So almost to a fault, it's almost scientific. After a divorce, people can't wait. Why? Freud will tell you very simple. Because the most natural comfort thing is food. It's true. So people are unhappy. They're unhappy because relationships have gone sour. There's a big gaping hole and a vacancy in their life. So they try to be happy. How do you try to be happy? You self-medicate. You figure, I ate, I was happy. And that does. Eating does make people happy, temporarily. So you eat, and you feel good. And then you're hungry again. And anyway, you don't feel good about yourself. Especially as you keep eating and become more obese, you certainly don't feel good about yourself. So you keep eating and you keep stuffing your face with food. But you can't have a relationship with lasagna. It doesn't work. And you have a real need. And your real need is not met by consuming substances. Whether it's narcotics, chas v'shalom, or whether it's just plain simple food. It doesn't make you any happier in a real and lasting way. So when people finally figure this out, If they're lucky enough to get to find a new relationship, and that's when they can find the sense of inner happiness. Because incidentally, one of the things we are built for is relationship. We are built naturally to be able to share our lives with somebody. That's how we're built. That's how Hashem built us. And therefore, when we don't have anybody to share our lives with, we're in what's called loneliness. And a state of loneliness and a state of happiness are not compatible. Loneliness and happiness don't go together. That's the nature. It could be people find joy in life despite the fact that they are lonely, but you have to find relationship. And some people are more gregarious, some people more outgoing, some people more insular. But everybody needs relationship on some level and in some way. Some people need to be friends with everybody, and that makes them happy. And some people need to be friends with one or two people, and they don't like being friends with everybody.
Is a relationship just with God enough?
I don't think so. I don't think relationship with God's enough. We have, just like you have to physically eat, you can't eat Torah. This concept of relationship. We're social animals. We're created for a community. We're created to have interaction. And if we're missing that interaction, something is profoundly missing. The Mishnah says, Aseh lecha rav, uknei lecha chaver. A rav and a chaver, not the same thing. You have to have a mentor, you have to have a guide, and that's very nice. You also have to have a good friend. And good friends, the Mishnah says, that's important. That's the way we can calibrate and figure out which way we're going. Both are necessary.
But a rishon had the closest relationship with the shever, it wasn't enough.
Right, because Adam Rishon was a strange, unique creature. And until he was a unique creature that was divided into two creatures, and he became a duotang of Adam and Chava, only then he found happiness. And then he went for sin. That was not a good idea.
Sure.
And we've been trying to put the pieces back ever since. The problem with this whole thesis is it sounds very nice in theory, and it's a great thing to talk about, but in reality, we're also intuitively built inclined for sin. That's how Hashem created us. Lepesach chatas revitz, as Hashem tells Cain, who's trying to do tshuva, but not really, because Cain got caught with his pants down. Hashem says, Cain, you happen to see Hevel around? He says, Hevel, what am I, my brother's keeper? Like there were so many people in the world. Like there you have one brother. I never heard of him. I don't know. I'm not sure. You sure, God says? Maybe you didn't. I don't know. It's very fun. Do you know about it? Funny you should say that, God says. Actually, his blood is crying out to him. Oh, right, you're God. You know everything, right? So the Cain really do tshuva? No, Cain doesn't do tshuva. If he did tshuva, he would have done tshuva. He was put into a corner, and he still denied the Hashem. And only after being denied and confronted, and then he says, okay, so now what do you want to do to me? Now you want to kill me? Huh? Now you want to make my life miserable? That would be a good start, yeah. it's like a very strange dialogue there. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Cain a message that's not just for him, it's a message for humanity. And we know that because it's recorded in the Torah. So if it's recorded in the Torah, it can't be a message for Cain, it's a message for all of us, because we all have a little Cain inside us. Ultimately, we are kind of descended from him, because Noach's wife, even though Noach is from a different line from Hevel, but Noach's wife is from Cain. And since all of humanity comes from Noach, we have a little Cain in us. And people have a capricious nature, and people have a jealous nature, and people have even a violent nature, chas v'shalom. That's possible. It's one of the range of possibilities that we have to try to avoid. So lepesach chatas revitz means that the Yetzirah is at every door. Every time you enter into a new reality, every situation you enter into, and that's what a door is the way you enter into something, the sin is crouching right there. As the Gemara says, Mishash haninit of latzis, that the moment a person starts to be born, the Yetzirah is right there. Yetzer Toiv doesn't come for a girl till she's bas mitzvah, till a boy till his bar mitzvah. But Yetzer Hara, right away. Their babies are very selfish little creatures. All they do is demand. They want me, give me this, give me that. I don't care who I'm waking up. I don't care whose life I'm destroying. I don't care what. I just want. Right? So that's really like a little Yetzer Hara. The baby doesn't mean to be bad. He's just being a baby.
Isn't that self-preservation?
Self-preservation at the cost of others is also like a Yetzer Hara thing. You ever hear of a baby who's selfless? The baby says to himself, my poor parents, Nebuch, they're so tired. I'll just be lonely tonight. It's not self-preservation. The baby doesn't need to be held and go, hoo, hoo, hoo. He wants to that. He doesn't need it. It's not like he's really hungry. Vaharaya, he wakes up. The mother tries to nurse him. He's not interested. He just wants to be warm. He wants to have fun again. You know, what his idea of comfort. So it's not self-preservation, really. It's certainly self. So it's a selfish expression. The babies, of course, are not evil because they don't know any better. But that is, by nature, that is a selfish expression. That's the way we're created. So the question is, how do we get to tshuva? So one way is, wait till you hit rock bottom. Just keep being happily unhappy and keep floundering in sin and keep making mistakes and keep doing the wrong things and keep making again and again and again and again. And eventually, you're going to be so miserable from all your avedas and you've got a midlife crisis. By the time you're 55, realize you're going absolutely nowhere and you're spinning all your wheels, you say, I have to do tshuva. I have to find some meaning in life. You might say that. That's not a good strategy. Because that's a strategy where I'm basically going for broke. I'm hoping that at some point my life's going to crash. And when it crashes, that's when I'll put it back together. So we can't do that. Can't do that. That's not... Avodas Hashem means take initiative. Not wait for the shoe to drop. And then I'll react. When you react, so then you don't get to have an optimal situation. Because you're always reacting. That's why the Rebbe maintained that the best defense is an offense. As the Rebbe told senior army officials once, before the Yom Kippur War, that sitting and waiting to your attack is a very bad idea. Unfortunately, we found that the hard way. The Rebbe begged them to do away with the Barlev line. The Rebbe predicted it would be an absolute disaster, and it was. It's like the Maginot line, which didn't work in World War II. The Rebbe begged them. The Rebbe foresaw everything that was going to happen, and they didn't listen. Why? Because they had to show that we were better. we're better, we're not going to attack. It doesn't work like that. You're going to lose all these young people, Rahman al-San, all these broken families, parents' life destroyed, young widows. For what? For what? Who are you impressing? Didn't work anyway. So what's the problem? The Rebbe said it in the Sikh. He said it publicly also afterwards. He said, when you are the one who launches the attack, defensive attack, because you're being threatened. Yeah. When the preemptive defensive attack is you choose the terms. When you choose the terms, you choose terms that are most favorable. When you react, the terms will be most unfavorable because you were attacked under unfavorable conditions for you. The enemy chose to attack the favorable with variables. So it did with everything that's in its favor. So you had a huge disadvantage. Huge, enormous disadvantage.
I just thought who fires first, who starts the wars, when he made the firing inevitable.
Right, exactly. The first shot is not the act of war.
Right.
The act of war is like, for example, in 1967 when they closed the Straits of Tehran, that was an act of war. That was an act of war. Did it work? No, because it was Israel. For any other country, everybody would understand. For Israel, they called us aggressive. For a week, they were talking about slaughtering all the Jews, and Holocaust scenarios, and they did what's legally an act of war, but still the Jews were aggressive. Okay, fine. So we know this is the reality of the world, and we don't have to sit and obsess over it. Just do what we have to do. And if we did what we had to do, and good for ourselves, and stop worrying about world opinion, we'd probably be in a much better situation. But that's easy to talk about war theaters that are across the oceans and give everybody else advice. The point of using these metaphors is going back to ourselves. So should we wait until the shoe drops? Should we wait until life gets miserable? Should we wait until I'm really nervous and it's Erev Yom Kippur, so if I didn't do tshuva? Somebody sent me a cartoon a few years ago. The big picture says, beat the rush. Start doing tshuva before Yom Kippur. So here we are, the Sunday after Shabbos Uvarchim. We're not even waiting for the Shechet Shel, and we're going to attack this straight on. So we have with them ruminate and think about all week. So by the time Shabbos comes, or the Shechet Shel comes, we're going to be in the groove, so to speak. We're not going to be waiting to react to a situation and say, oy vey, I'm so unhappy. But instead, we're going to look for optimal variables. We're going to choose the circumstances that are most effective and most healthy and most straightforward, and that's how Perek Zion begins, which we happen to be from our learning of the Yeres HaTshuva last year. That's where we're beginning here. Ulam derecha emes v'hayosha. Ulam means but. Like kind of like, to be sure, the derecha emes, the way of truth, and the way hayosha, the straight way, lebechinas tshuva tata, to the tshuva tata, which is the lower level of tshuva, which means hey tata, the lower hey, which I'll explain in a minute. I'll refresh your memories from the past. But I want to first talk about the Alter Rebbe's opening volley here. It's a derech emes. It's a way of truth. It's yosher, it's straight. So what does that mean? Up until the seventh chapter of Tanya, what we learned is not really true. Now we're going to learn derech emes. After the derech sheker, chas v'shalom. Now you read all the lies, Alter Rebbe says, now I'll tell you the truth. Is that what it means? And what does it mean, hayosher? Till here was a convoluted way, and now we're going to get to the derech hayosher. So the Rebbe says that there's two very important messages being played out here. Number one, let us define emes. Once we define emes, once we define truth, we'll know what derech emes is. What's the truth? The truth is lasting. That's the truth. Seasonal truths are not truths. Fashion statements are not truths. Truths of the day, month, week, or hour, those are not truths. What's the truth? The truth is always true. Emes havaya le'olam. The eternity of God, that's true. That's true. You can be sure it'll always be here. Anything that's here now and gone tomorrow was never really the emes. So do you like this? I love it. I'm so excited about it. 2 days later, I could care less. I thought you loved it. Well, I loved it 2 days ago. They never loved it. The test of truth is if it's lasting. Even if variables change, then it will still be there. So for example, with all the silly romance and volumes and all the silly movies, even Western culture and civilization knows what's true love. True love is when Rahman al-San, one partner falls into disrepair and is in a disaster of a situation, and their spouse remains at their side. These are the stories of the people who are comatose, and nonetheless, the spouse is there at the bedside every single day, doing everything they could. It's a one-way relationship. There's nobody home. You can't even talk to somebody. And some of you have seen this with your parents. You see this unbelievable love, this unbelievable loyalty and devotion. There's no romance, there's no fun, there's no relationship even, but there's love. And that's true love. That's the emes. What's a true friend? A true friend is not there when you're popular and cool and everything's great for you. You know what a true friend is? The true friend is there when chips are down. That's how they say, that's when you know who your true friends are. When? When it's not fun to be a friend. When you're not in a great situation. So that's emes. Emes is truth. It doesn't change. It's not a result of variables. It's not the product of circumstances. It is. It is because it is, not because something else caused it. If there is a foreign cause or a foreign substance or foreign reality or foreign happening that makes something happen, that's not the emes. It's not true in and of itself. It's merely a symptom. It's a result of something else. So if a person wants to do tshuva, why does he want to do tshuva? Well, because he got caught. That's not real tshuva. Why is that real tshuva? Because real tshuva means I really want to return to Hashem. That a relationship with God is important to me. But if I got caught, and because I got caught, I'm forced into a corner, is that real tshuva? Of course not, because if I wouldn't get caught, then I wouldn't do tshuva. So it's not the real thing. If I have a moment of inspiration, everybody gets an epiphany. That's just life. We all get awakenings. Sometimes, boom, our eyes open up, we have a moment of clarity. If that's the cause of my tshuva, is that real? Is that true? Maybe not. Maybe sometimes it can spark a permanent change. Sometimes it could, and sometimes it can't. Why? Because that was only under the influence. In that moment of something catastrophic or devastating or huge that took place, suddenly there was a seismic shift within. But all of a sudden, it shifted right back. Because it was only symptomatic of something outside, an outside factor that was causing this kind of reaction. And Alter Rebbe says, we cannot wait for earthquakes in our personal life. We cannot wait for something to happen. I said, oh, that's when I'll do tshuva. And invariably, what happens when you wait for that to happen, do tshuva? It may never happen. It may never happen. A lot of people say, I'll do tshuva before I die. Don't worry. Before I die, I'll do tshuva. Everything will be fine. He says, Ema speakingly. If you're relying, if you're living a life of sin because you're relying that you will do tshuva someday, invariably what will happen is you won't get that opportunity. Which, as Alter Rebbe says in Likutei HaMoharim, doesn't mean that you'll be prevented from doing tshuva. Ein davar ha'omid b'fnei tshuva. Nothing can stop you from doing tshuva. But you will not have shasa kosher. You will not be given suitable opportunities. One of the most powerful ways I learned this lesson, I was once called to somebody's bedside, a woman's bedside. I'll never forget this because it was so surreal, so crazy. And the person did not live a very spiritual life, very, you know, kind of traditional a little bit. And her child said, please come talk to her about tshuva. You know, it's like, say, vidui. He was awesome. This child wasn't so super observant, but, you know, okay, fine. So I go off to this hospital. I'm at the bedside. It's a very strange conversation, which I say to this woman, hi, I understand that the doctors are giving you a few days left to live. Maybe we should talk about, like, you know. And I don't really know her. I only know her child. So it's, hi, I'm Robert Kaplan. Did you want to talk, maybe? The person, the soul is vibrant and alive, and even when our body's not in such a good state, the neshama is still very real. Maybe we want to talk about the neshama things. She looks at me like I'm totally crazy. And she says, why don't they bring me tuna fish? All I get is egg salad sandwiches. And I'm getting this monologue about egg salad and tuna fish. And I think to myself, how tragic is this? I said, Shema Yisrael, Adon Olam, you know, sometimes you sing a song, you bark. No, all she was interested in, why did she get an egg salad sandwich and not a tuna fish sandwich? I don't even remember which one it was. But it was one of the sandwiches she was getting, and she didn't like that sandwich. And she, like, Nebuch, like, here's a person who's dying, and she was dead 2 days later. But all she could care about in that last moment was egg salad or tuna fish. Because you know what? If you're waiting for the shoe to drop, and you're waiting for that extreme moment, don't be so sure it's going to work. The Alter Rebbe is here to be your guide, to help you realize spiritual success, to help you complete your mission, to fulfill your mission, to discharge your mission in a way that's effective. So he says, I'm here to give you a derech ha-emes. I'm here to give you a way that's lasting. It's not the result of something else. And it's a derech ha-yosher. It's a straightforward way, meaning it's not going to be the result of something. It's going to be an earthquake in your life, or tornado will rip through your reality, and then you're going to have this awakening, this epiphany. No, says Alter Rebbe. Here is a way that's going to be derech ha-emes and derech ha-yosher. How do I know it's going to be derech ha-emes v'ha-yosher? Because you chose it. It's not a reaction. It's your choice. You said, I'm going to do this. So if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to react to something, then we can assume or hope that it actually will work properly.
So therein, you have to try to live life like every day is the day before your death.
Yeah, so that Shlomo HaMelech already said, that every moment your clothes should be white, which means shrouds. It's a euphemistic reference to shrouds. So Shlomo Melech said, live every day like it lasts. The Rebbe once said by Febrengen, that instead of living every day like it's your last, I mean, thinking about death all the time, which is something that was adopted actually by Christian theologians. They used to keep a skull on their desk in the Middle Ages. And the term for this was momentum mori, or a reminder of mortality. Instead, the Rebbe said one should meditate on the idea that Mashiach will come any moment. And once Mashiach comes, you can't do tshuva anymore. It's a little happier than death. And it's just as effective. Because once Mashiach comes, the jig is up. So now is the time to do it. Yeah, that this is true. This is true, Jack. It's true that if a person will think these things, it will spark the person to do tshuva. It's true. But the Alter Rebbe says, he wants to give us a strategy to create a feeling. And the problem is, how do you create feelings? I should feel frustrated. I should feel upset about my situation. And because I feel bad about my situation, that's why I'm going to do tshuva. Well, how do you do that? Either I feel bad or I don't feel bad. And the problem with think, live every day as your last, who is it about then?
Well, yourself.
It's about you. So who are you really worshiping?
Yourself.
Yeah. So it's not so nice to worship yourself. I need my slice of heaven, I need my fun, because I need my higher pleasure, so therefore I'm going to do tshuva. So then I'm not really an Eved Hashem. I'm supposed to be thinking about the Eibishter. So that maybe could be a quick strategy when somebody's in a desperate moment when the Yetzirah is raging, and you stop and think for a moment, okay, so tomorrow I could be dead, and what will I die with? With this ridiculous Aveira that gave me a moment of pleasure, and then all kinds of pangs of regret. Was it really worth it? How stupid is that? That could be a quick strategy to deal with an acute situation. So acute situations have to be dealt with, but again, we can't just have triage. We have to deal with a strategy of living a life of tshuva. Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sachs relates that when he was a young man in 1966, he spent a few months learning in the yeshiva in Kfar Chabad, in Lubavitch yeshiva. Took off some time from Jews College or whatever, Oxford where he was, and went to yeshiva. So he met, at that time, was the Dayan of London, was Chaskel Abramsky. It's a famous Baal Musar, very much not in the Hasidic camp. But Rabbi Sachs had gotten to know him at some point, and he was like a budding star, so you know, he gave him some attention. So he said, what are you up to? So he said, I was just learning in Kfar Chabad, the Lubavitch yeshiva. What did you learn about? What was the focus? He said, we were learning about tshuva. Maybe it was like the summer, I'm not sure. So the Pchatzko said, tshuva, yeah. By zeh, it's how he used to speak. By zeh, by them, he said, by them, it's a way of life. By us, it's a thing you do. If you do an aveda, you do tshuva. But by them, it's a way of life. He was a very smart man. He got it. He nailed it. By chassidim, it is a way of life. And that's not really a new idea. Chassidus, the Mishnah says it. Tshuva ma'isim tovim. It's a description of life. That everything, the whole eternity, right, is not worth one all the pleasures of the world, like one moment of eternity, one moment of heaven, and all the eternity is worth not one moment of tshuva ma'isim tovim. So we saw tshuva ma'isim tovim, tshuva first. Because tshuva, as the Alter Rebbe explains it, is not simply a response to sin as one of the 613 mitzvahs or one of the 365 negative mitzvahs. Now you have a 248th positive mitzvah that sparked because you did one of the 365 negative mitzvahs. Like you stole something, which is one of the negative mitzvahs, that sparks an immediate need for a positive mitzvah, namely to return the stolen item. So some people understand tshuva that way. But Chassidus says that's not tshuva. Tshuva ma'isim tovim means that you're always in a state of yearning. You're always in a state of return. You're always in a state where you're trying to come closer. We're trying to nurture a more profound relationship with Eibishter. That's the meaning of tshuva. Now, tshuva tatar is what the Alter Rebbe explained in chapters 5 and 6, which means that the Alter Rebbe, using Kabbalistic parlance and jargon, discusses the name Yudke Vavke, which is the source of Havia. It's the source of our existence that comes through the prism of the letters Yud, followed by He, followed by Vav, followed by He. And he talked about the hay, the final hay, which represents, in the language of Kabbalah, Malchus, or the lowest animating level of divine energy, that the hay falls off, so to speak. So when the hay falls off today, we have Yud Kei Vav, and the hay has fallen off. Why is it fallen off? Because we truncated it. Because of our sin, we caused the hay to fall off, the proverbial name of Yud Kei Vav Kei. In other words, we took the download of divinity that's supposed to enable us to live, we cut it off from its source. We went offline. So we still have this cloud that we can siphon off life from, but it's no longer connected to the original source. And because it's no longer connected to the original source, who went into galus? Who went into a state of disrepair or exile or dysfunction? not just you, who went into Hashem, the Shechina. You put God into that situation. So the mindfulness here that we need, that we've already kind of cultivated in the last few chapters, is that when a Yid does an Aveda, the Aveda does not only affect you. It affects all of us, but more deeply, it affects God. Because God makes himself needy. And God puts himself in a situation where your activities will make a difference to him. And the more distant you are from Hashem, it's not just you distant from Hashem. Remember, there's a piece of God in you. And that piece of God in you is now distant from Hashem. So you're separating the Shechina from its source. And because of that, you have something non-selfish to think about. It's none of the metaphors given. A person could be in a lousy situation. But he's like a street urchin to begin with. And Nebuch with him is the crown prince. Somebody of very high birth of nobility. Somebody's not used to being in such a situation. So a person could think, no, okay, I can handle this. But this guy, Nebuch, he has really rachmanus. Look what he's in. Look at the situation he's in. I was a pauper to begin with, but this person was on top of the world. Sometimes you can have rachmanus on somebody else, even though you don't have such rachmanus on yourself. And myself, okay, big deal. I can handle this. I didn't really expect much different. And that's normal, as long as we don't have a condition which is called NRP or narcissistic. What's it called? Narcissist.
Narcissistic syndrome, I think. Right?
Yeah.
Obama.
Well, maybe Trump. We'll both of them. How do you diagnose this narcissistic condition? That everybody's talking about it now. This is the latest thing you're talking about. All these narcissists who basically are controlling government or wanting to control government. They're all narcissistic on all sides. Narcissism means you don't give a hoot about anybody else. It's one of the five symptoms. The five major symptoms, one of them is you have no compassion, which is actually inhumane. That's not normal. A normal human being does have compassion. A normal human being does feel bad for somebody else. But a narcissist only feels bad about themselves. So when you jab the narcissist like a paper cut, it's like a mortal wound to his heart. It's like you gashed open his skin and tore his kishkas. But when he gashes people open and slashes them all over...
Narcissistic personality disorder.
Oh, very good. Narcissistic personality disorder. So what is it called?
Narcissistic personality disorder.
Oh, see, we can Google it now. NPD. Shkoyach. Okay. So now Google further, and you'll read that part of NPD, narcissistic personality disorder, is lack of concern for another. No empathy. A normal human being is empathetic. Say, oh, Nebuch. Oh, Nebuch. What do you give a hoot? It's not you. That's not me. I'm a human. You have a heart of flesh and blood, a heart of stone. A normal person feels bad about something like that. Maybe in an extreme way, only because he sees it as a mirror of himself. Maybe he imagines himself being in that situation. Maybe because he really has a little bit of empathy left. He didn't manage to destroy that all. But a normal human being has empathy. How could you not have a chmanus? You know, you're not human or something. But a person could be like, it's almost a form of a mental disorder, which doesn't mean, if you're selfish, that's it, you're a narcissist. Everybody's selfish. But even selfish people could feel bad for somebody else. A person doesn't have the ability to feel bad. So incidentally, most of these discussions of disorders are not supposed to be treated pharmacologically, rather psychologically. Pharmacology is a last resort, not a first resort. Today, now, pharmacology is like candy. You just dispense it. Oh, you're feeling something? Here, take this, you'll feel better. That's ridiculous. If you actually would work things through, you would be able to heal 98% of ailments probably, or 96%, or 95%, or 92%. I don't know what the percentage is. But for sure, I'm convinced that today's psychology vastly overuses pharmacology. And it's not my personal opinion. This opinion is very well known out there. It's a scientific opinion that's based on statistics and studies that show that we are a pharmacologically driven society today. We're just looking for quick fixes. We don't want to do the hard work, but things can be fixed without pharmacology. Sometimes not. You have to go to a professional. Don't go to a rabbi for this. See a real psychiatrist, but one who is not addicted to doling out pharmacology because he's getting kickbacks, or because he makes more money that way, or because that's what he was trained to think, but because he actually wants to work with people. And when you work with people, you train them. Most of the Sefer HaTanya is the Alter Rebbe giving you strategies to deal with situations. So how do you deal with, what is it called, NPD? That's the second strategy. That's not the first strategy, because the Alter Rebbe assumes that you're still somewhat human. And if that doesn't work, then he gives you a second strategy for your inhumane side. But the first strategy is that you should be ha'alef. The way you should feel is because we explain Tshuva Tatoa means that your Avedas don't only affect you, but your Avedas affect HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If your Avedas affect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Meila, that you're in a distant and forlorn situation spiritually. It's not good. But you look what you did to God. Look what you did to your neshama. La'ayda rachamim el yoinim, to awaken mercy, mimokar harachamim, from the source of mercy. So look what the Torah, it says, sometimes we say, of harachamon means merciful father. And then we say, of harachamim is father of mercy. What's the difference? One is a descriptive term. One describes the father as merciful. One is saying the father of mercy, meaning the parent source, the source of mercy. So we're not just saying HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a merciful father, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of mercy, the source of compassion. So here we're talking about Mokir HaRachamim, not of HaRachamon, but of HaRachamim, the father, the source of mercy. So you should be Ma'oyre Rachamim, not in a superficial way. Now don't deal with symptoms, deal with this holistically. Go back to the source of mercy. And if you can tap into the source of mercy and go back to the highest level of deepest subconsciousness of empathy, and you should feel bad on the shmasi. Don't say, I feel so bad. I'm miserable. I'm not happy. And I could be happy if only I would do tshuva. So therefore, I'm really upset about this. No, because then you're just dealing with yourself. And we talk, you're worshiping yourself. That's not a good thing. What should you do? You should start to cultivate a sense of empathy, a sense of compassion, a sense of sympathy for the neshama. Look what the devastating long-term impact of your sin. You had some fun, that's very nice. Who else was hurt in the process? So sometimes when people behave addictively, this actually works. Sometimes rock bottom is not when they themselves fall into rock bottom, but if they're still somewhat normal, when they see everybody else around them collapse.
Because of
their behavior. Sometimes when the drug addict sees that he destroyed his or her spouse and he's destroying the children, he's destroying the possibilities of others, sometimes this is still somewhat human. That itself can be the rock bottom. So, but this requires empathy. And this requires of work. Because the difference between the drug addict or the whatever addiction it is and what we're talking about is that those are dealing with realities we can see, touch, and feel. The things we can taste. They're part of our everyday nature. We're talking about spirituality, it's not. By definition, it's beyond our everyday nature. We're talking about something we cannot see. Something we cannot touch. It's an intangible. And it's negatachush. It's not something intuitive. We don't intuitively think spiritually. We don't intuitively think in a godly or holy manner. Why? Because then it would be no challenge. It would be no achievement to do that. It would be natural. Nobody should get a medal said, oh, you are a father who loves your children. Givaldik, you're an amazing person. Let's talk about how amazing a father who loves his children. That's not amazing. That's normal. Normal is a father who doesn't love his children. A mother who cared about her children. Psh, ma, unbelievable. A mother who cared about her children. It's unbelievable. What's shocking is a mother who doesn't care about the children. A mother who cared about children is normal. A normal person. A normal person who wants to be healthy. Wow, what an Avod Hashem. Yeah, well, being healthy is part of Avod Hashem. And it says, Hayesh Haguf Bari, Vishalom, in order for the person to serve Hashem, he has to have a healthy body. He's Medaki Avod Hashem. Like the Rambam says, Nuchas Deis, the Magad of Mizrach says, a small body in the hole in the body is a large hole in the Neshama. And here's a person who's trying to be healthy. A Givaldika Avod Hashem, because he wants to get a good night's sleep. No, that's normal. That's normal. A meshugana, a crazy person, a person who's insane, is trying to hurt themselves. He's trying to gash himself and slash his wrists and crack his head open. That's not normal. A person who behaves normal doesn't get credit for that. Avodas Hashem is not the result of normalcy, the result of just doing something intuitively or naturally. Avodas Hashem means you toiled, you worked on something. So we're not going to have a situation. This is where it differs very much from what we call that addiction or a broken life. Because a person can go through his whole life, live his 90 years, 120 years on earth, and never give a hoot about anything spiritual. Because I'm a very good person. I feel good. I'm nice. I share once in a while. I'm a good person. I don't miss God in my life, not even one bit. Okay. Actually, we're kind of created that way. We're created that way so that we should wake up anyway. And then when we do wake up, then it's taka an achievement. So you're not going to feel this lack of godliness the way you feel the lack of food. Or the way you feel the lack of sleep, or the way you feel the cold, or the extreme heat. Because that's what we call reflexive. And things that are natural reactions, a reflex, is not Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem is choreographed. Avodas Hashem is a choice you make. It's a choice. If it's not a choice, it's not Avodas Hashem. And there's always going to be the choice to go the other direction. You can always choose otherwise. That's what makes this choice meaningful. So what we need really here is mindfulness. And the mindfulness is to be ma'ira rachmim on the neshmasei, v'nafshir alikis, shenaflo mi'igra rama, which fell from, this is a proverbial expression that's taken from the Gemara in Chulin, I think. And over there, the Gemara talks about a high roof, think about like a castle, toward the king of the castle, you know, the Humpty Dumpty metaphor. He's on top of the world, highest roof, and he fell labira amikta into the deepest pit. It's a metaphor. So you were on top of your game, and you fell into the lowest of realities. And now, which is Chaya Chayim Baruch Hu, Chaya Chayim means the source of all life. You were the source, the neshama was in the source of all life, and it fell labira amikta into a deep pit. This is Hecholas Hatumah V'Sitra Achra. This is what we call the chambers of defilement, of darkness, of deprivation, spiritually, of godlessness. That's the Sitra Achra, that's the dark side. That's the Darth, the spiritual Darth Vader reality. You fell into the black hole. This is a terrible thing. So that's something you should actually care about. First we talk about your neshama. And the truth is, it's much more than your neshama. Not only did you damage your neshama, you damaged the Shechina itself. Shem Havaya Baruch Hu. Like it says, v'yoshev el havaya, let him return to havaya, v'yirachamehu, feel bad for havaya. I should feel bad for God, let him feel bad for me. Stop it, you narcissist. Feel bad for him. Look what you did to the Shechina. The Shechina invested itself in you, and what did you do in return? You put the Shechina, you put God's presence down in such a low madrega. Why? Because you're a yid. You don't have a choice. The Shechina comes with you wherever you go. But by dint of the fact that you sin, automatically the Shechina is harmed. It's like saying a child behaves badly. Come to the person and say, you know, that your parents are fine people and they have a good reputation and you're destroying their reputation. And the selfish teenager says, I don't care about my parents. They can go to hell, I don't care about my parents. I have to worry about parents? Well, don't worry about themselves. But you're hurting them. Dude, your father's the prime minister. When you run around drunk and drug addict, you're destroying his political fortune. Well, so what? That's not my problem. Forget that I'm his son. Make believe I'm not his daughter. Make believe I'm not my parents. You can't do that. The reality is what children do reflects on parents. What are the chmanas on parents who have the angst, the tragedy of seeing a child who behaves that way? You cannot separate yourself from where you come from. It's just like that, like being Jewish. You say, when you behave a certain way, you make a chilul Hashem. He says, forget that I'm Jewish. Nobody ever forgets that. How many times in the media is Madoff Jewish? Was O'Malley Protestant? Nobody reported on O'Malley sins. O'Malley, nobody gives a hoot about. What's the difference? If he's Scottish, Irish, Chinese, it doesn't make a difference. He's Jewish. Everybody talks about the fact that he's Jewish. Why? That's the meaning of Chilul Hashem. Because you cannot separate yourself from your reality. The people will always point the finger and say, that's who you are. So you bring discredit to Am Yisrael. And if you do a good thing, it's Kiddush Hashem. Why? Because by dint of the fact that you're Jewish, you will bring credit to Am Yisrael. Well, this is almost a metaphor or a reflection of a higher and deeper reality that we ultimately represent God. And therefore, when people hate the concept of godliness here on earth, who they hate Jews? So even faith systems that talk about God a whole day, but they talk about escaping this world to get to God. So they hate Jews because Jews are saying, no, God's right here. You don't have to blow yourself up to go to God or to go to a heavenly reality. Make heaven right here. We hate you. That's the meaning of Kol HaSeinu Yisrael saying it's Misham HaVayolam. They hate God who invested in this world.
The Veris not only affect the Ebershter, they affect all of Klal Yisrael.
The Veris affect all of Klal Yisrael, even the Ebershter himself. If your mitzvahs make Hashem nachas, then your Aveda makes Hashem pain. So you're causing Hashem pain. You're causing a denigration to Hashem. So la'ayda rachamim rabim, to be ma'ayda rachamim al hashpa Shem Havaya, on the source of Shem Havaya, which is nishtal shlu v'yarda techachol ha'sitracha, which you're dragging through the muck and the mud. Hatmeim lach yesim, Hashem is to keep you alive. If you're a yid, who's keeping you alive? Shem Havaya Baruch Hu. Shem Havaya Baruch Hu is getting dragged into Maisi Enish v'tach b'leisov, to the person and his scheming and his evil thoughts. K'mishu Kasev, like it says, melech asr b'rahatim, that the king is bound up in the mind. The cords are tresses of the mind. What happens is the person has bad thoughts. It's my thoughts. No, the Eibush is just connected to your consciousness. So if you are having bad thoughts, who ultimately is impacted? HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Who begins Golos HaShechina. This is Golos HaShechina. This is exile in the Shechina itself. And Zman HaMasugal HaZeh, the right time for this is not when you happen to be shopping for tomatoes and you think, oh, you're the Shechina. Who's thinking about the Shechina? You're just worrying if the tomatoes are ripe or not. When you're in business, you have a next email to respond to. So Al-Tareb says, don't make a joke out of this. This is something you need to take serious time. It's quiet outside. Person used to wake up once upon a time was common. Maybe once what every day or once a week or once a month. They would get up before dawn and they would mourn for the Shekhinah. And this is a special time because it's a special time before day breaks. Is a special time also spiritually and the time of Chesed L'mayla. And a person would connect and he had nobody else to bother him. And he could actually sit and focus on this. And he could and we have to figure this out in our own equivalent if we don't get up for Tikkun Hatzais. But this idea of Tikkun Hatzais, like it says in the Siddur, in Ha'aretz Ayin Shem, by you look over there, and the Alter Rebbe writes in the notes which are written, notations of the Alter Rebbe and Siddur, explaining this, Apichsidus, and he gives one example, Zesha Kas Hashem, that's written over there, Nafla Ateres Hashenu, which is a quote from the Megillah of Eicha, from the Lamentations, our crown of our head has fallen, Oyin Olanu, woe is tas kichatanu, for we have sinned. What does that mean? Because we cause the crown to sin. What's the crown? The corona of the neshama, of the person is the neshama. The chelik elikam ma'al mamash. Who caused that to fall? You caused that to fall. Why? Ki chatanu. V'lachein, therefore, nikra HaKadosh Baruch Hu, therefore, the Kabbalist called HaKadosh Baruch Hu, melech oluv. Call him an ashamed, embarrassed king. Why? Who embarrassed him? Who caused him shame? We caused him shame. The shamed prime minister, the shamed governor, the shamed president. Why? Because the children brought them disrepute. Because the children ultimately were connected to them. He said, look at this. Look what he raised. Look what an animal he raised. So it doesn't matter how good he is. Look what he raised. Look what he gave birth to. So it brings shame. You bring shame to the family. You bring shame to your nation because of what you represent. And therefore, we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's called Melech Asar, Berhatim B'Pirkei Echolos, in the Pirkei Echolos, which quotes over there that Amakar Moshe Kordaviru, who was the predecessor of the Arizal, Ki ein lecha el ben gadol mizeh. There's no greater shame and embarrassment than this. Ubefrat, especially in more detailed fashion. Kasher yisbein in hamaskel b'gdulas ein seif baruch hu. When he actually learns a little chassidus, and he talks about, he meditates and contemplates the greatness of Hashem, the memalek olam Hashem, filling all worlds, the seif kolam, which is not the place to talk about this, is explained at length in many places in chassidus. Kol echad v'echad l'fishur sichli, each one according to what he's capable of understanding, v'havanasei, to what he can grasp of his own intellect. Everybody has their own intellectual grasp, their own framework of cerebral activity. And what you're able to understand, so when you actually would take the time to think about this and make this your focus of consciousness, then you'll be very aggrieved and you'll be very, very sad and very upset, very bitter about all of this. What happens if you have, what is it called, NRP? What is your NRP? So you have to come back next week. Next week we deal with NRP. What happens if I couldn't care less? What happens if I think of all these things that I'm beyond empathy? The Alter Rebbe gives a strategy, even if I don't have NRP, but a way that helps out, a secondary strategy, and only these two strategies together enable us to bring ourselves into a state of proper yearning and craving, a state of sincere tshuva. So, sum it up. Today we talked about sparking sincere tshuva. That's what this is about. The strategy to spark sincere tshuva. And the first strategy to spark sincere tshuva is to realize that your sin is much bigger than you. That the fallout and the aftermath of your inappropriateness is enormous. And it's affected Klal Yisrael, it's affected your neshama, and ultimately affects HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shekhinah itself. To be continued.